It's Tuesday, May the 7th, and remember when I said yesterday that it was Met Gala Day? My brain was clearly unable to remember and understand the concept of time zones, because the Met Gala is in fact today. I promise, it really is happening today. Stuff will have all the coverage you want and need from 10:30 a.m. Let's get cracking. Kia ora, this is Newsable. I'm Imogen and this is What's Worth Talking About. What's up with the Warriors? The Warriors are now a month with no wins. Where are they going wrong and can they turn things around? Why? New Zealand will be keeping a close eye on President Xi Jinping's tour of Europe, the South Island drug dealing network that was operating out of a farm, and has the internet found the most boring man in the world? All that's coming up in a moment here on Newsable.
Newsable takes time and resources to produce. Please support our mahi and visit stuff.co.nz/support.
The Warriors captured the hearts of the nation with their late season surge to the playoffs last year, and with the returning of Roger Tuivasa-Sheck among the additions to their squad, there was considerable optimism that the Warriors would at least equal last year's fourth place on the ladder. Now, they still might, but after a month without a win, their next assignments are two tough away games. So can they still turn this thing around? Let's find out from league legend, former Warrior and co-host of Stuff's new league podcast, League of Our Own, Adam Blair. Kia ora, Adam.
Kia ora, yes. I'm excited to start that podcast.
And I guess that means I can call you a colleague now, which I'll definitely take. Adam, you know we all want the Warriors to do well, but things are just not clicking. Why is that?
Yeah, I guess they've built up this expectation now over last year and the start of this year of what we expect of the Warriors to perform and the way that they can play. So when they don't perform well, we ask these kind of questions of why aren't they performing their best? I think this year I've been confident going into most games around their performances and where they're going and the direction that they're heading consistently with their performance. The last month has been really tough to watch. Obviously, depth is a big issue, but we're asking a lot of questions for our middle forwards who are a little bit older as well. They're playing bigger minutes than they should be because of the depth that we don't have on the bench when it comes to NRL experience. Teams know that when they turn up to play the Warriors, that the Warriors aren't just going to roll over anymore. So they have to turn up and put in their best performance. I think defensively, they haven't been at their best, and they would know that themselves, especially around the middle of the park. But I think because this fatigue has come in, because we're asking these older guys to play some bigger minutes, in the back end of halves, that's where they're starting to struggle a little bit around their defensive systems. Yes, they're a team that's down on confidence right now. There's no doubt about it. And you can see that in the way that they're playing as well. So it's important for them now is to, I guess, regroup, look within and see how they can fix these things. I think teams are starting to understand how the Warriors play and they're not detouring off that system, which is a good thing. But if the teams are getting better at defending the Warriors, they need to find ways to exploit opposition.
They're currently 14th on the ladder. Is that a fair reflection, do you think, of the season so far? We're only week 9 of 27, mind?
Yeah, well, I think if you look at their last month, yes. But if you look at their first four rounds, I think they're better than what they should be placed right now. But you're only as good as your last performance. If they can really go after these next two games, it won't matter what has happened now and previous. So if they win that game and they win the Panthers, everyone's talking about them being a contender for this competition.
You've done a bit of coaching yourself. How would you turn it around for this weekend?
They look like they're happy. And I guess that comes from losing. When we watched them last year, when they were playing well, they were enjoying themselves. Things were going their way. And I think they're going for a bit of a tough patch right now. I think it's doubled down on their standards and their processes and their systems with trying to figure out how they can be better in those areas.
Mount Smart has been full or close to for every home game so far, but how long do you think the new fans who were attracted by last season's drama will stick with the team?
Oh, well, yeah, those bandwagons, is that what you're trying to say? Those bandwagons that just jumped on. Hey, if you're a diehard Warriors fan, man, you'll be there, you know, rain, hail or sunshine. But at the same time, it's been awesome to have all those fans supporting the Warriors at Go Media Stadium. It's important that they keep turning up. They're a game away from moving into the closer to the eight. They're two games away from being much really closer to the top four. If they can get over the line in these next couple of weeks, their Go Media Stadium against the Dolphins will be sold out again, and the fans will turn up in their numbers and support the boys. Really enjoying the fans and their support and the signs and the movement that's been going on with Up the Wars. I think it's important that everyone stays strong. For me, there's no panic that they can't turn this around. I think they've got a good enough squad on paper and coaching staff that done a good job for over the last year and a half that they shouldn't be where they are. All the talk at Australia was the Warriors were going to be competing for this title. If there's a team to watch out for, it's the Warriors.
So Coach Andrew Webster is safe?
Oh, without a doubt. I think he's building something special. Again, the results aren't going their way, but they just need to double down on their standards and go after the next game.
And we're going to make the playoffs?
Definitely going to be in the eight. I had them at the start of the season in my four. I still think there's a possibly long way to go. I'm really keen to see how they perform in these next 2 weeks, especially up against the Roosters, who are a quality side. We see the best of the Warriors against the Roosters. I think that's where we start heading towards the top.
So the final message at the end of that, I guess, is old Warriors catch cry, keep the faith. Thank you so much, Adam Blair. Adam is co-hosting Stuff's new league podcast, League of Their Own, with Goran Paladin. That arrives in your feeds next week.
Yes, I'm excited for that one.
Up the Wars. Yesterday, I shared with you some job interview horror stories from a BBC article, one of which included a group of people being asked to moo like cows to see if they were fun. Now, I asked you to get in touch with your interview horror yarns, and this one was a doozy, and actually from the other side of the table as an interviewer. Someone wrote in to say they had a person hand out merchandise from their current employer to the entire interview panel. And then when said person was asked what they knew about the company, they whipped out a printout from the company's website and just started reading it to themselves. When one of the interviewers tried to ask what was going on, the person held up their finger and just said, "Just 1 minute." I can imagine the silence in that room right now. If you ever wanted to get in touch, you always can. You can email me. I have a new email address, imogen@newsable.co.nz. China's President Xi Jinping is said to be on a charm offensive in Europe. It's the first time in 5 years that the Chinese leaders visited the continent, heading to France, Hungary and Serbia. So with our government exploring whether or not to get closer to the US and join the second pillar of the AUKUS agreement, does Xi's Euro trip have any implications for us here in New Zealand? Well, with us now to unpick some of these issues is Nick Smith, a senior research fellow at the University of Canterbury's National Centre for Research on Europe. Kia ora.
Kia ora.
Nick, why France, Hungary and Serbia?
Firstly, with Hungary and Serbia, they've had quite good bilateral relations with them, particularly Serbia going back at least a decade. And France, I think that's more to do with Macron, the president of France. He's tried to kind of forge a more independent stance on China recently. That's the typical French kind of approach to world affairs as well. Macron upset the Americans, I think about 2 years ago when he went independently and spoke with Xi and tried to take something of a different geopolitical stance with China.
What is the MO of this trip? Is it to divide the West's view of Beijing?
I don't know if it's as intentional as that. I think from China's perspective, the important kind of underlying aspect of this is that this idea of the Indo-Pacific and this emerging competition in the Indo-Pacific, that's something that the EU has attempted to enter as well. But in Beijing, I guess their hope would be that the EU entering the Indo-Pacific would be as a kind of third power and not necessarily a kind of lapdog to the US. But then when you get individuals like Macron, who for a long time have professed a desire for the EU to become more strategically autonomous, China sees that as an opportunity of perhaps promoting the idea that the EU can be more independent. And at the end of the day, the EU and China have very robust trade relations. China is the EU's second most important trade partner, and the EU now has surpassed the US as China's most important trade partner. So there's a trade aspect to this as well.
Why is Europe more friendly towards China than the US?
I think it really boils down to quite a simple explanation, and that's to do with geopolitics. The US and China in recent years, the growing tension there can be quite simply explained by the fact that their power projection overlaps. So there's this kind of overlapping of interests. Obviously, there's the Pacific Ocean. China has certain aims there, right? Certain national interests, and they kind of conflict with the US's vision there. When it comes to the Europe and China, well, we have massive landmass between them, so they're not subjected to the same geopolitical tensions. And I think that helps explain kind of the trajectory of the relationship over the last couple of decades.
What then does this tour of France, Hungary and Serbia mean for New Zealand, especially if we were to embrace, say, AUKUS?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think New Zealand's come to the realisation, and I've spoken to EU officials previously, certainly like a year or 2 years ago, and said, well, there are actually some similarities in the New Zealand approach to China and the EU approach, trying to focus on the win-win aspects of the relationship. And when it came to the areas where there were concerns or disagreements, particularly over human rights, both New Zealand and the EU were trying to address that in a kind of more diplomatic way and not in the kind of critical way that perhaps the US or Australia were trying to deal with that. So New Zealand, under this new government and the signals that we are kind of preparing to entrench ourselves more within this kind of US-led approach to the Indo-Pacific, policymakers here will be certainly watching that. And the relationship, obviously, between the EU and New Zealand is in quite a good place at the moment. We just had the free trade agreement. When it comes to the Indo-Pacific, there's a lot of kind of commonalities between the two. If you read the EU's Indo-Pacific strategy and then you look at our own kind of strategic communications, they both emphasize pretty much the same things: a rules-based international order, an emphasis on trade and maintaining kind of a productive geopolitical setting where it allows the kind of more positive aspects to come to the fore.
When you say New Zealand will be watching this talk closely, what will officials be looking for exactly?
Well, I think they'll obviously be looking at the communications. Again, I don't think Xi Jinping going to Europe is that surprising given the importance of the relationship between China and the EU. But I guess they'll be kind of following and seeing if there's any change in tone and the messaging. China's got this kind of difficult situation where domestically there's rising nationalism. There's an expectation amongst the domestic population that China becomes more proactive, more assertive. And so I think that's a challenge because obviously internationally, China's very reliant on the international trading system. It's certainly profited a lot from that. And so it puts officials in a bit of a tough situation. So that's why we get things like the wolf warrior diplomacy, which is completely for domestic audiences in China, but obviously has implications and for its diplomacy as well.
Interesting indeed. Nick Smith, Senior Research Fellow at the University of Canterbury's National Centre for Research on Europe. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
It appeared that a vehicle may have gone over the 80-metre cliff into the sea.
There have been no bodies found despite considerable debris being washed ashore.
9 years ago, a man named John Beckenridge abducted his stepson, Mike Zhao Beckenridge. Soon afterwards, they vanished. Nearly a decade later, there is still no sign of Mike or John and no agreement about their fate.
The family believe that they are residing overseas under new identities.
The court should find that, sadly, Mike and John Beckenridge have died as a result of the vehicle being driven off the cliff.
Now, a new investigation is trying to find out what happened to them.
From Stuff Audio and the Press newspaper, this is The Lost Boy, the disappearance of Mike Zhao Beckenridge. Listen on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The story of the Canterbury cocaine cartel is next. The story is hard to believe and reads like the script of a Hollywood movie. So to make sure you never miss yarns like this one, chuck us a like and a follow on your favourite podcast platform. You might be familiar with the hit Netflix documentary Cocaine Cowboys. Well, turns out New Zealand's had a case of cocaine farm boys. A group of South Americans used farm jobs in Canterbury, and yes, they milked cows, as cover for a $45 million cocaine dealing operation. Jake Kinney from the Press Newsroom in Christchurch has been covering the story and he's here to tell us all about it. Welcome back to Newsable, Jake. Great to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us about this drug dealing network, the Canterbury Cocaine Cartel.
Well, yes, just as you've said, they are basically a group of South Americans who have come to Canterbury and started working on farms with the intention of basically creating a centralised base to filter cocaine throughout the country. So they've sort of used that farm worker guise to cover up for what they were really doing when they weren't milking cows.
So what? Tell me more about the farms. How did the farms even become part of this?
It appears to sort of be in a tactic. So far from the sort of life of flashy cars and expensive restaurant meals is sort of they've used that farm worker job to cover up the fact that they were distributing cocaine throughout the country. They did keep busy on the farms doing the normal jobs they would do, and a lot of the people they were working with said they were good workers who were reliable and trustworthy. It just so happens they were doing this on the side.
Absolutely mind-boggling. How did they get caught in the end? And surely this must have attracted the attention of law enforcement agencies around the world.
It did, exactly right. Mm. We don't know exactly for sure, but it appears as though just it was as simple as some of the packages got flagged. Customs picked up on the packages themselves, had a look at who was consigning to them and who was receiving them on the other end, and the pieces kind of fell into place.
What happened to the dealers?
So they're all either before the courts to be sentenced or have been dealt with already. So there's a good tranche of them have pleaded guilty to the charges they faced, money laundering and importing the drug. We're at various stages with the members. Some have been dealt with and some are to be dealt with in the coming months.
Goodness gracious me. This is obviously very serious and it's a Class A drug, but it does really read like the next hit television series. Jake Kinney from the Press Newsroom, thank you for your time.
Thanks again for having me.
Today, I bring you this headline from the Washington Post. Is this the most boring man in the world? The people of the internet have watched a video titled "The Most Boring Video Ever Made" 3.1 million times. Here's a snippet.
Now, sooner or later, you're going to be using the Macintosh and you're going to do that, and then you're going to wish you didn't do that. It's called repentance, I guess. And they knew that was going to happen, and so they put in a nice little feature.
That was Randy Smith giving a 1 hour and 47 minute tutorial on how to use Microsoft Word. He did that, all of that, 1 hour and 47 minutes in one take as well. Now, originally, this was filmed in 1989 and sold as a videotape, but it somehow made its way onto YouTube, and the people of the internet have just gone absolutely crazy for it. There are tens of thousands of comments, ranging from "Randy, you're a legend," to "this is boring but perfect," to "I can't remember the number of times this video has helped me sleep." Randy had no idea that his video was popping off online until late last year when a total stranger texted him to thank him for putting her to sleep. It's unclear whether or not this is the same person who left that comment on the video. Randy is retired and lives in Florida. He's a former motivational speaker, and I got to admit, I do like the way he talks. I'd say it's more comforting than boring, though. When approached for comment from the Washington Post, Randy said why somebody who has no interest in Microsoft Word would be watching it, especially such an old version, I have no idea. I have an idea, Randy. It's because you say things like this.
As I pull down this file menu, you will notice that the word hope does not appear. You will also notice that there is no such thing as Command M for miracle.
That's Newsable for today. I'm Imogen Wells, and I might just try to see if Randy can help me sleep tonight.
Now I've decided that what I need in life is an undo button.
Newsable. News that's worth talking about. If you liked it and reckon it's also worth supporting, please make a contribution at stuff.co.nz/support.